pain from the nerve impingement again. They got the claws in you, my friend. Into your claim I'll fight again. Depose the witness from the...
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to a virtual session of the Justice Team podcast. That song was a parody of Crash sung by Greg Schaefer. I think that might be the best version of a parody song that we've done. There's some good ones out there, but Greg really knocks it out of the park. Today we're going to go over something that is near and dear to my heart, which is leaving the shackles of a law firm and going out on your own, going solo. All of our panelists have gone out solo, most of them very recently. So they have a fresh idea in their head of what to do to get started, why they got started, how to get started. But first, we'll introduce everyone. We'll go right next to me, the little square next to me. It might not be the same squares for everyone. So, Steve, why don't you introduce yourself, where your practice is. Don't go too deep in what you do because we're going to get there.
Sure. I'm Steve Rosen. I went solo originally about, 6.5 years ago with Rosen Law Offices, and recently have joined what was another solo practice a while ago in Sachs Law.
Miss Alexis?
Good morning. Alexis Gamliel here. I am representing my own firm now, Gamliel Law, and I opened my own practice just officially 3 months ago. I do personal injury and employment law.
How about Mr. Max Lee? This is a weird time with COVID and the pandemic, but Max finished a trial yesterday.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. My name is Max Lee from the law office of Maximo and Lee. I'm based in downtown LA. I do personal injury law, employment law, and housing law. And I opened up my firm in 2014.
All right. So, you know, everyone knows, usually if you're listening, you understand I'm one of the Simon brothers. I'm Brad Simon. My brother Bob started his own shingle in 2008 or 2009, and then he couldn't figure out how to write motions or any even letters were elusive to him. So he brought me on board and we formed the Simon Law Group now over 11 years ago. So it wasn't a true going solo. He does have a twin brother that complements what he can't do and he complements what I can't do. I did a podcast the other day and talked about how I'm the world's worst deposition taker. I get embarrassed and shy, and if the defendant tells me they didn't do it, I just believe them and move on. So it's very bad, but at least I have my brother that can pick up the slack for that. So Steve, talk about picking up the slack. Like, what you were, I think you were with a defense firm first before you decided to move over to the plaintiff world. Like, can you explain a little bit why you did that and how?
Sure. So I was with a defense firm for a while, actually, almost 8 years. I started out of law school as a summer clerk, like a lot of people do. Got an offer, started as a first year. Worked my way up, basically to partnership consideration. And the first time I was up for partnership consideration, the day before, I resigned to open up my own firm. I didn't personally love the defense side as far as positioning goes. I like working with people.
Well, I just want to, Steve's in the Justice HQ office in Orange County. And in the background, I think I see Marat, our bartender, our usual Justice Team bartender is back. I think that's him. Is that Marat back there?
And wow, you got some eyes. He's all the way back at
reception. Very good. Brad. My silhouette identification is bar to none. You should tell him, I'm going to message him, tell him to make some drinks for you. You're in downtown. Or you're in the Orange County Justice HQ location, and Alexis is in the downtown Justice HQ location. I'm in my house. Max is in an undescript room with a door, right?
He's in purgatory right now.
So Steve, you decided to go out on your own, but why didn't you choose the partnership? That was probably going to be some steady money. It was probably going to be something where, it's consistent. And then you went from consistency to something that's very inconsistent.
Yeah, freedom. I mean, that's the basic answer. The reason I went solo was I had a 2-year-old boy. I wanted to have more freedom, coach baseball, coach soccer. And when I originally went out, my goal was, hey, I make a good living on the defense side. If I can match that being my own boss, that's the way to go. Just give myself more freedom.
And Alexis, you're very recent. You're new to the game, and I'm sure you're experiencing firsthand what it means to be a lawyer, but also a business owner. You're the IT professional. You are the HR professional. You are a software specialist, but you're also a lawyer. Why don't you explain kind of your process of going out on your own, why, and kind of the challenges that you started out with?
Sure. So I started my own practice after working for a larger plaintiff's firm for several years. I clawed my way into that firm during law school. I worked there as law clerk for 2 years before coming on as an attorney. And I'm grateful for that experience because it allowed me to get tons of experience early on. I was taking between one and two depositions per week, defending between one and two depositions per week. And I was lucky if I was seated in my office at my desk for any appreciable amount of time. So that process of being in court, being in deposition so frequently gave me a lot of insight into what it takes to be the best lawyer I can be. So after having that experience, all I really needed was courage. And like Steve said, that allure of freedom was very enticing, but I wasn't ready until I had some important things happen to me in my life, including the birth of my first child. And that, I think, really gave me a sense of maturity that I took with me into my practice. And I do take it with me every day. It makes me, I think, just a better human being, which makes me, in turn, a better lawyer. And then the other thing that happened to me was I had a pretty significant death in my family. And having the experience of my mother-in-law passing away after we were very, very close really brought home that circle of life, experiencing a death and a birth very close in time, which I thought to myself, you know, every day is something that we need to appreciate. And if you don't take your life by the horns, no one's going to force you to do that. So you have to do it yourself. And so that's what I did.
Every day is a gift, and that's why they call it the present.
Exactly.
A very wise person once said that it was Master Oogway from Kung Fu Panda 1. If anyone has seen Kung Fu Panda, the first movie, your kids may be old or old enough or not old. Yeah, it's an amazing movie, and Master Oogway is the best. We'll go over to Max Lee. Max, you had your own practice for a couple years now. He's actually of counsel with my law firm. He helps us with a lot of our employment cases and personal injury cases. Max, like I said, finished a trial yesterday, which is like the golden egg, a golden ticket, Willy Wonka, to be able to do that in today's world with not being a criminal or an expedited trial. Max, why don't you tell us about, I'd love to hear about your trial, but first let's talk about the law offices of Max Lee.
So thanks for having me here. It's great to meet up with all of you guys, Steve, Alexis, Brad. Hearing you guys and your very thoughtful, very considered paths to your firms is very inspiring because that was not me. I represent the people who, by necessity, had to go solo. So I was with a firm in my out in Pasadena, where I, you know, the general area where I grew up, and after 2 years, I just couldn't do it anymore. I didn't have the experience that Alexis had of taking a lot of depos. I think I took one deposition the entire time I was there. Maybe I defended one or two. I had two trials as a second chair, but really as a potted plant because I didn't get to do any openings, closings. They weren't even jury trials. With Steve, you know, you wanted more freedom. I just needed to get out of there. And so I went out on my own, no money, living with my mom, just setting up my quote unquote office, which was just my laptop and my scanner and my printer in my sister's room because it was bigger than mine. And she was off saving, you know, people as a doctor. And I just hustled. And for the first 6 months, I had no clients. For the first 6 months, I had nothing really. So I just learned as much as I could. And I met as many people as I could. And I just started getting some very bad cases, and I worked them up, and then I got some just bad cases, which looked great to me. And then I finally got some okay cases. And you know, years later, I'm glad to meet up with people like Steve and like Alexis and consider them my colleagues, and be with the Simon Law Group is really an incredible achievement in my mind. And I always wanted to be a trial attorney, even though I didn't know what that meant early on. And, you know, I got to do a trial yesterday, which was my first time one since the stay-at-home orders got put in place. So I'm living the dream.
So awesome.
So like Max started out with zero clients, which is the scariest thing to do. Alexis, when you put your shingle out a couple months ago, did you have existing clients and you were going to go for it? Or are you just like, I'm starting fresh, and then you hit the pavement looking for people?
I really started fresh, and I have so much gratitude for people coming out of the woodwork. Max, what you just said is so admirable, and I respect your hustle so much. For me, when I announced the opening of my firm, I was nearly in tears over how amazing people were to me. And I attribute it to early on in my legal career, and even going back before that, I always tried to just be a good person, be a good friend, a good family member, and friends and family and mentors and colleagues and people from every which direction were calling me, texting me, emailing me, hey, I have this potential client, I want to refer to you. And it's been so wonderful. That doesn't mean it's not incredibly difficult. As we all know, it's very, very hard to take the balance of vetting potential cases while doing the legal work, while doing the business side of things. It's a lot. It's a huge, huge commitment from a lot of different angles. But yeah, I'm really grateful to have a full caseload of personal injury and employment matters. So, but that doesn't come from thin air. It doesn't come out of thin air. You know, I've stayed in touch with a lot of different folks over the years. And I'm just grateful. I'm really, really grateful to stay in touch with people and have good friendships that turn into good business relationships.
And I think along those lines, I think it's very important as a business person, not only to get along with everybody, but to be a human to everyone and civil, because you'll never know where a case comes from. I think yesterday we had an amazing case referred to us by a defense lawyer, someone that we worked against and had a trial against, and we had earned his respect enough where we were the first firm he called about a product defect case. So I think that speaks volumes, Alexis, is you have this great relationship. You were well respected within the community, but your community may not give you cases because they're going to keep the cases for themselves. But your friends and family, they're going to be who you turn to, or they turn to you for these cases. Steve, did you go out with a book of business from the defense side, or were you just like, I'm going to go down to San Clemente and start marketing to the locals?
Sure. No, I didn't have an identity at first. And that took me a couple of years actually to figure out what my identity was as a local attorney. I actually switched from Nevada to California. I'd been practicing in Nevada for 8 years, and I moved my family to California when I opened my firm. So I went to a friend's firm that does mostly pre-lit. And I said, look, I'll take all your litigation cases. I'll help, you know, good, bad, ugly. I'll do whatever you guys need me to do. At the same time, I opened up an office as well in Nevada that I still have. And I started taking Nevada cases. And I went to Nevada, gosh, for the first year and a half, almost every week. I would take the Wednesday flight, and then I'd fly back Thursday. And it was interesting. And then eventually I was able to bankroll my firm, do some marketing, local marketing in South Orange County mostly, and eventually found my identity. But I just went out and said, hey, whoever's willing to work with me, I'm here, I'm willing to work hard, and I'll take whatever. And that's kind of what I think all of us do.
Yeah, I think that's what a lot of people need to understand that are thinking about going solo. You're not going to go solo with some amazing case. You're not going to get some hugely profitable case in year one or even year two. You're probably going to be taking the worst cases, not just for experience, but just just to get some money in the door, like a $15,000 policy could float you for a month. Those don't turn over for 6 months after you get it, probably, but you got to put that in early. You can be selective about your cases, I think, a year or two in. But at the beginning, I think, you know, my brother and I, we had taken some cases and ended up having to do them pro bono, which I think a lot of people end up doing is you don't feel right taking a fee, or the recovery just is not enough for what happened. And we had done a couple of those. And then a year later, their brother got into some motorcycle accident, and that ended up being a huge case for us. And we were still a young law firm, and we had associated in actually the law firm that Alexis used to work for to learn about litigation and trials, because we were probably only 3 years out to learn how to do that. So for us, a lot of the learning was done by mentorship and associating in bigger firms that had already done this. Because you're never alone as a plaintiff's lawyer. I think defense lawyers are a little different, where they're all fighting for the same market share and they don't share information. I think we as a plaintiff's community, and especially in Justice HQ, share our information and refer cases to one another, and truly understand that we're in it for the client. So I'll go back to Max, and you talked about your sister's room was a little bit bigger to accommodate your computer, printer, and scanner. So what hardware did you start out with? What was your first like investment into a hardware as a solo practitioner? What would you still have invested in that same thing?
Yes. So it was the ScanSnap.
The same one I had.
Yeah, scanner. I didn't have very much money. I had to dip into my personal savings, but that was the first purchase that I had. I used the same laptop that I used for, you know, my personal stuff as my you know, work computer. And then I think I bought a very cheap black and white printer that just didn't cost very much money, because you know, money was tight. So being my first few years, being lean was very important to me. Being able to put as much money into the cases, into a deposition or court filings, or, you know, trials, rather than having an office with a window that allowed me to actually look into the world, and instead of having time pass me by, I didn't have that for the first year. I had a virtual office, and I bike there, quite frankly, on my to pick up my mail. And you know, I still keep those lessons in mind. I still keep that kind of mindset that the money should go to the clients, not to to pad my ego, to have a nice office, should go to the client. And that's the ethos that I had early on.
Yeah, I think Max had settled a case that he worked with us a couple months ago for mid six figures, and he felt that he was ashamed he wasn't getting enough. And I had to explain to Max, like, this guy was drunk and fell off a wall. Like, you pretty much knocked it out of the park for what happened there. So Max really is a person that truly believes in recovery for the client. And I think that work ethic has earned him respect within the community. But that didn't, when he started out, he didn't know anything from anybody, where he was showing up at how many like social events did you show up just trying to meet people?
To meet people or to eat the food? I mean
mostly the food, and incidentally meeting some contacts.
Well, okay. So I went to pretty much every single Cala event that they could. I mean, I got fed well at home, but I mean, turns down opportunity to get Cala Pizza or Panda Express. No, I mean, not anybody in my family, at least. But yeah, through that, I met just a lot of people from Cala that I consider really good friends, not just colleagues, but friends. The first time I met Bob, I think I stood out because I was wearing a red leather jacket. And he was just like, I like that guy. Everyone's in suits, or at least dressed professionally. And this guy has a red leather jacket that was actually a Halloween costume back in the day. And so I just stood out, I guess, as the person who just was very comfortable with myself, eating as much food as I can at Cal events and wearing whatever I wear usually.
So Alexis, you decided, like, after a couple circle of life, some Lion King moments, you decided to go out on your own. Do you have any regret not doing it sooner, or did you think, you know what, that was my time, or this, you know?
I believe that was my time. I do. I think it required going through some things before reaching the point where I could do this with as much strength as I feel like I have now.
And Steve, we may have some listeners out there that have just passed the bar exam, or maybe they just have their provisional license, or they're waiting for results. Would you promote anyone to say, hey, it's okay to go out right out of law school, or would you recommend to try to get a firm to get some experience? Because some people may not have that option, but you know, if someone really truly, like my dad was a truck driver for UPS. We didn't have anything, we didn't have this big, you know, war chest to start out with, and most people don't. So what would you say to that person that really has no financial backing, but wants to get out there and do it?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think going to a big firm and getting experience or working for another plaintiff's firm, whether it's small or big, and getting the experience is ideal. But like Max said, sometimes that just doesn't fit your plan. If you're going to go out on your own early, immediately after the bar or something like that, there are organizations like our organization, Justice HQ, or do what Max, you know, did, and go out and meet as many people as possible, take on cases, you know, take small percentages of cases just to learn, you know, basically work for free in order to learn. I mean, Max is probably regarded in our community, at least, as one of the most intelligent and experienced attorneys I've ever come across. And it's hearing his story, it's probably because he spent
Are you talking about Max, like on this panel, or the other Max that we all
know? Yeah, Max on this panel. I mean, I go to him with questions, with technical questions. He's usually great with it. I am a nerd too, so I love learning about the law. But if you're going to go out early, what I'm saying is do what he did. Meet as many people as possible. Read as many books as possible. Reach out to firms to try to get those books for free, or whatnot, or reach out to the writers. I mean, if you're starting off, you reach out to a writer or a trial guide and say, I have no money, but is there any way I can get a used copy of your book or something like that? I've heard great things. Chances are a lot of people within our community are going to be very willing to help you out. So I would say it was better for me to go out and get the experience and, you know, make money for 8 years before going out on my own. But if that's not an option, that's not the end of the world. Reach out in the community. It doesn't cost much, you know, to become a new lawyer from CALA or from OCTLA or one of these organizations.
Alexis, what kind of resources are you able to utilize right now that is of little to no cost that's benefiting you starting your practice?
Well, that's actually what I was thinking about as Steve was just speaking. The thought that came to mind is you need to build your brand well before you need it. And that's the biggest resource and asset that I think I bring to the table and that has helped me in my practice is I am my own brand. And I have been for a long time, even though I've been, I haven't had my own firm forever. It's relatively new. But people know me separate and apart from any organization I've been a part of, from anything that I've touched. And you know, that's because I make the effort to get to know people, like Max was saying, really go out, get out there at the events and meet people. And, you know, a lot of the cases that I've been referred thus far, not just from family and friends, but they're from other well-regarded attorneys in the community. And, you know, they trust me because I've proven myself over the years. And so that's the resource is embrace yourself as the resource. You and your skills are irreplaceable and no one can duplicate what you do. You're unique. Each and every person is unique. So that's the best and freest resource there is. But technically speaking, you know, find yourself a great laptop, find yourself some great lighting for all the Zoom appearances now, and find yourself a great network. Joining Justice HQ has been instrumental and really helpful for me. But you know, things like that are all supplements to who you are. And that's the ultimate resource.
I think that it brings up a very important point is you may graduate from Yale or Harvard and be the most intellectual, smartest attorney you know, but unless you can get a client and keep that client, you're not going to do anything. So brand, it's not just branding, but I think a lot of people try to make their brand something that they aren't. Mm-hmm. Like Max is trying to fit, you know, a square peg into a round hole working for a firm, but that's not him. That's not him. And he's not going to be able to be successful trying to be something he's not. So I think that that's a very important thing, is just to be, you know, all, we tell our kids, be true to yourself, and that people lose sight of that when they go to law school and then they get a firm and then they get stuck doing what they're doing. And maybe it takes a life and a death for us to be reborn. Mm-hmm. So,
And one other thing that I wanted to say on that topic too is, you know, I left my previous firm on July 28, 2019. I filed my articles of incorporation on August 28, 2019, exactly a month later. And so in that month long interim, there was a lot of soul searching that happened, but that was really the culmination of my whole life. You know, you reach this point where you step into your power. And you know when you're ready and when that moment is for you, for each person. But it was interesting because during that month-long interim, I had a conversation with somebody who I've been friends with for a really long time. We crossed paths in the professional community through Cala initially. And she told me, as I was kind of looking at the landscape of what I wanted to do next, she said, "You know what I was telling my husband the other day? Alexis doesn't need to work for somebody. She is somebody." And that stuck with me. And I was like, "Oh, this is an epiphany." Like, you know, and I said, "Yeah, I am somebody. And I'm going to go put my name on a business card. And I'm super proud of it. And these came in this weekend. And that's me. And I'm my own person now. And it's awesome."
You're also your own everything else. What other things have you found yourself doing that are not lawyer-like?
Tech problems are the bane of my existence. But I am learning how to Google and solve each and every problem and tap into every resource that I could possibly find to fix those things. But, you know, that never ends. But the problem solving is a very important skill and will carry through to many different areas of the practice of law. But the tech problems are not my favorite part of having my own practice.
So talk about tech real briefly, about what software solutions everyone is using just for the basics, like word processing, email, document database, just storage. So Max, what do you use for all of that? Or do you have different pieces that you're using?
Different pieces, but I use Microsoft Word. When I first started out, I was like, "Hey, can I get away with just using Google Docs? Like something like free?" And I very quickly realized no. So I you know, there are some costs. You have to pay for the things that you need to pay for. So Microsoft Word, I got that through ScanSnap. You know, that's a more expensive scanner out on the market. But fortunately, it comes with
Adobe
PDF software.
Yep.
Right.
That's so why I bought it. It came with a license for Adobe Acrobat 10 or whatever it was, and that was usually $300 for itself, and the scanner was $500, and I was like, "Hey, win-win."
Exactly. Now it comes with like Nuance or like something else, but it still works. So, you know, I bought things that were very reliable, but also, you know, cost effective, that I could use for a while. But I knew it wasn't going to, you know, break the bank. It wasn't the best by any means, but it was workable and usable. But I mean, I tried to save as much money as I could. I would go to law libraries when they were open and weren't hotspot for a pandemic, and use Westlaw for free, and went to borrow books that Steve's talking about, you know, just trying to expand my knowledge base that I can't just learn on my own, or I wouldn't learn it, you know, very quickly. So I spent, you know, it was spending time to do that, to go to these places, and it was not as comfortable as, you know, my office or like my home, but it was a way of me, again, saving money and getting the same quality of stuff, you know, being able to do key sites so that I know that whatever I found on Google Scholar was still good law and not, you know, completely like debunked and overturned.
So Steve, you have, well, I know you're with Sachs Law now, but for Rosenwald, do you have a research Westlaw, Lexis? Do you use any of that? Do you have a subscription, or are you just using what Mac does, is Google Scholar, and hope and pray that the key site's still right?
Yeah, I mean, I use LexisNexis now. I have for about the last year and a half. It was kind of a proud moment when I could afford LexisNexis and do the background searches, and I had enough clients to make it make sense. But yeah, I subletted from other attorneys. That was kind of my path, and I used a lot of their resources. You know, we didn't have JHQ when I started in 14. So I had to do that, in essence. I had to go find an attorney that was successful, look at Craigslist. I would, you know, sublet some space from them until a more advantageous relationship opened up, you know, a year and a half later or whatnot, and sublet from them. And just use other resources that I could find from other people. But I think Alexis hit it on the head. And if you're going to go out on your own, you have to be resourceful. I mean, we can all talk about all the different software and stuff we use, but when it comes down to it, you don't have money. You got to find it, right? So finding the software, finding the help is the way to find success, I guess.
All right. So Steve, you have hired people. What is that process like? Like what?
Miserable.
When did you first decide? What kind of person did you want? And when did you first decide, you know what, I need to find someone that does all those things that I shouldn't be wasting my time with?
Yeah, I mean, about a year out, I hired somebody that I had for the entirety of Rosen Offices. And I kind of was in the mindset that, hey, I need one paralegal that's kind of my ride or die as I'm taking on a bunch of cases. When I had about 20 cases, I hired somebody to help with that. I also didn't know what I was doing with pre-lit. You know, I come from the defense side, that's a whole new world. So I hired somebody with experience in that that could help me, you know, hone my demands and deal with all the deadlines and correspondence to insurance. But that is a hard decision to make as a solo, when to hire.
How about you, Max? Is it still just you? Do you have anybody, or is it just the Max show?
No, I was able to expand. June 2019, I hired one of my very best friends. And you know, when you're on your own, you don't have to think that you have to do everything yourself. You can have models. And so I'll say that, you know, Brad and Bob, you guys were a great model for me from, you know, even before I was up counsel. And Bob always said, my firm works because of Brad. And he's like, I'm so happy that I have, you know, not only a best friend, not only a brother, but a law partner who fills in his many, many gaps.
A lot of gaps, a lot of holes in his repertoire.
Yeah, he's like Swiss cheese. So I said, hey, I don't have a blood brother. My sister, she's doing her own thing, being a doctor.
Saving lives.
I know, like saving babies as an OBGYN. Whatever, we're all very disappointed. But so I had one of my best friends, he was looking for a better thing, and he fills in where I can be very scattered brain and loves ideas, but don't have the skills to make them work or the focus. He came on board as my director of operations. And then I hired a law clerk, basically to kind of see what is out there for law students and to kind of get their perspective. And then I got a paralegal she's just fantastic. And now I actually just yesterday have my first attorney that is with the law office, Maximilian Lee, that's not named Maximilian Lee. And so she, and Bob actually connected her and with me, and, you know, I was able to take her from her former firm. And so we're trying to expand our trial practice, but hiring good people, hiring people you trust is just, I mean, you have to do that. I mean, so that's what Steve has. And I hope, you know, and whenever Alexis is ready to have that to expand so she can do what she needs to do and kick butt in trial, which is what she's used to, and growing her business, but not doing everything. And so I'm learning that going from the true solo, which is what I was on Friday, I guess, you know, with staff, to now Monday, it's like, I run a firm.
Now you got to start thinking about payroll and 401k deferment and all this other stuff.
What is that? Payroll? What?
I see, don't work for free. I see the IRS just joined our Zoom call Sorry, Max.
Oh, my bad.
But yeah, that's the biggest. And I think Max talked about it, is hiring people you trust early. And it really is very important, because you got to let that person or people do things and be comfortable that they're doing them. I mean, our first handful of hires were all they all had the last name Simon. And then when we ran out of family members, we brought on a guy named Eric Heath. And you guys have seen Eric a lot in the Slack channel, helping people nonstop. But it really, it is a leap of faith. But once you take that leap of faith, you realize you can triple the amount of work that you're doing, because these people are taking care of things that you were balking your time down and probably doing better than you were. So a director of operations is a good first hire. A paralegal is a great first hire. Usually, I think for me, an associate comes down the line, because that's just a duplication of your skill set. Whereas as a solo coming out, starting their own practice, they probably need an administrative person to help in the office more. So Alexis, have you thought at all about bringing people on, or are you just going to see come what may?
Yeah. And I think I need to correct some of the dates that I gave you early on, because I was referring to 2019. Obviously, 2020 was a big blur. So actually, those events actually occurred in 2020.
Wow, okay.
So July 28, 2020 to August 28, 2020 is when I submitted my articles of incorporation. So here I am today, a few months later. And yes, it is a goal of mine to follow in Max's and Steve's footsteps to bring people on. I do feel like that will happen sooner than I may have thought would happen, which is a good thing. And hopefully that will free up some of my time to focus more on the lawyering. Although I do really enjoy the business planning and business development aspects. It's funny, actually, I was realizing when I was in high school, I was the president of the Future Business Leaders of America Club. And then in law school, I thought I had to leave all that kind of all of those aspirations behind. And now I get to do both, which is really cool. But yes, freeing up my time, minimizing some of the more administrative things would be helpful. So yeah, I do have a goal of bringing some people on. And I think somewhat of a hybrid of a litigation assistant combined with paralegal would be probably my first hire, which is my goal in at least by the end of 2021.
Yeah, I think like my brother and I, we co-founded with Teresa, Justice HQ, because of a lot of these things that people want to have that are just costly. Bringing somebody on is not only a commitment, but you know, you feel like you're responsible for that life now. And that person, even if they're doing a bad job, you feel like, man, I got to keep this person employed. And it is a big step to bring on a human being to come and be, you know, reliant on you for obviously money, but support emotionally, and you'll learn a lot more about their lives, and you become part of that family.
Yeah.
And that's what I hope Justice HQ is doing for everyone, is giving them part of the family and family members to turn to for information, for help, but also software solutions that can solve some day-to-day activities that you don't need to be focusing on. You can focus on being a great lawyer. Max, are you waiting on the judgment? Like, when is the court going to make a ruling, or is it any moment, or is it, you know, a set timeline?
We got the verdict. It was,
wow.
It was the most bizarre trial. Judge Mackey, who is over 90 years old. We started, and at the end, when evidence was closed, you know, I've done a few bench trials, and the more recent ones, especially in Los Angeles, the judges usually want written briefs. And I was like, Your Honor, you know, what would you like to do for the scheduling for the written briefs? Like, what are you talking about? We're doing it now. We're doing it live. So we had to, my co-counsel and I, we had to do the numbers for, it was a wage and hour claim. So we had to calculate minimum wages over the course of the amount of time that my client, who was you know, misclassified as independent contractor. So we had no wage statements, no personnel file, nothing, and just calculated on the spot. And I had to repeat myself like no less than 5 times about all the numbers and the dates. And I was with a very upset defense counsel like next to me, who really wasn't objecting. He was just arguing with the judge, like, you know, your decision is not right. Fortunately, it was a plaintiff's verdict, $98,000 for damages alone. We get to add on pre-judgment interest because it's, you know, wages that were supposed to be owed, and waiting attorney's fees.
Max Lee out there fighting for the people while we're out here doing podcasts and Zoom calls. I mean, that's phenomenal. That's, and for the people listening out there, you have to actually pull off a trial right now. It's, the courts are backed up. There's not a lot of availability for Max to get in there and get justice for a misclassified worker is life changing for that individual. So thank you, Max, for changing somebody's life. Hopefully you get all your attorney's fees as well, but I think just that award alone is going to change that person's perspective and probably their children's perspective.
I hope so. Good man. He has 5 kids, works really hard. And so I'm honored to represent, you know, people who trust me to work for them. And I know the Simon Law Group has that same philosophy, Alexis and Steve as well. I mean, you guys work for people who really need your help.
All right. So we got like 50 seconds here. I'm getting alerted here. So for the listeners out here, how do they get a hold of everyone? Max, how if someone needs to get a hold of Max Lee, how do they get a hold of you?
My direct mobile number is 626-808-4157. And you can just look up Maximilian Lee on Google and my firm website should pop up.
And what areas of practice do you focus in?
Employment law, personal injury law, and housing.
Okay. How about you, Alexis? Someone wants to get hold of Alexis. How do they get you?
Alexis@gamlielaw.com for my email. And my phone's 310-256-3916. Or you can take a little screenshot of your podcast here.
There you go.
Boom. There you go.
And what type of practice areas do you focus in?
Personal injury, wrongful death, and employment law in the litigation sphere. And you can also find me on Instagram at Gamliel Law.
Awesome. Steve, how about you, buddy?
Yeah, my cell phone is 949-885-6429. 949-885-6429. I always answer it. I answer texts. You can email me directly at either steve@snrosenlaw.com or steve@saxlawyers.com. And Rosen Law Offices on Instagram.
Well, that's it, guys. I would give out my cell phone, but I don't pick up my cell phone. I don't answer texts. You need to get a hold of me. You can reach me at robert@justiceteam.com. That's my brother. He's my
father, Bob.
He's my filter. All right. Thanks, guys, for being on this edition of Justice Team Podcast. For anyone that thinking about going solo, wants to go solo, I think our panelists would field any questions, as would I. I have a lot of, I run the business I have been. I know about software solutions, employment stuff, how to hire, when to hire, basically ranges of how to pay people, what to pay them, payroll services, all that fun stuff no one thinks about when they go solo, but you got to do it. All right, Teresa, take us out with another song, Crash Into Me by Greg Schaefer. Here we go.
You've got a limp, you've got back pain from the nerve impingement again. They